back, guys, with episode 7, Clear Path Podcast, Clear Path NBA Podcast, presented by Vendetta Sports Media. This is Jacob, joined by Nate again. Had a little bit of a technical difficulty, but we're back, and we're here to cover the post-trade deadline for you.
Yeah, I mean, right back into this. Thanks for having me on again, Jake.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, we'll spare you. We'll spare any of the small talk. We'll get right into it, guys. You know, this trade deadline came and passed today. A lot of moves were made. Kind of want to hit off on the top with what the Cavs did, and kind of a rundown of the moves that they made to really revamp their roster and kind of give a fresh, I guess, feel to the locker room. The first move they made this morning was sent Isaiah Thomas, Channing Frye, and a protected first rounder, probably lottery protected, but not confirmed, to the Lakers for Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance. And they also traded for Rodney Hood and George Hill from the Jazz and the Kings, sent Iman Shumpert to the Kings, and sent Jay Crowder and Derrick Rose to Utah. So we'll kind of go all through that a little bit, bit by bit here. But the main thing off the top is the Cavs were able to add Clarkson, Nance, George Hill, and Rodney Hood, which that's a lot of trades. they three different teams. Like, that's a lot going on for like the few hours they did it in.
Yeah, definitely. And I think these pieces are all important to not only just the general overall conditioning of the team and how they're going to fare later on in the season, but also just from a locker room standpoint, as there were a lot of moving parts, mostly with Isaiah Thomas and how he didn't really seem to mesh with the team. I really specifically like the Clarkson and Nance additions, both young athletic players that'll definitely help on the defensive end, which is something that the Cavs have been in desperate need of.
Right. They'll give definitely some bounce, some youth to that team, which is really important. And that is another thing, you know, Rodney Hood as well. Those three players are all in their mid-20s. It kind of really reshapes that unit there. George Hill still, I think, in his late 20s or his 30, 31, something like that. So he's still a plus defender and a sharpshooter. So they really did kind of change their fortunes. And you mentioned it too, that the number one kind of piece moving here today was Isaiah Thomas. I won't say that he was maybe the most talented player moved, but, you know, as far as in the news, he kind of felt like he pushed his way out or was ready to go. It didn't seem like him and LeBron meshed well. You know, now he's traded, you know, less than a year after being traded to the Cavs. What's your kind of take on him with the Lakers? Like, what's his kind of, what do you think is good about it for him?
For him, I think it gives him a chance to really showcase himself on a bad team on national TV. As he's kind of entering his contract season, which has unfortunately for him been very tarred with issues. But bad thing for him is playing along Lonzo Ball and how that'll work out for him. I don't see a lineup where they're in at the same time. Strictly just defensively, they can't play defensively together.
Nightmare.
if you're a fan, you get to see a lot of points. But there's no way that you can have Isaiah and Ball play because of Ball's shooting. First of all, he can't play the two really. And they're both ball heavy guards who won't play defense. And adding on to that, Isaiah's agent just came out saying that he refuses to come off the bench. So potentially looking at a buyout there.
So there's that. Yeah, he's you know, no one doubts Isaiah's heart and his kind of, I guess, fire to play basketball. And, you know, I don't blame him for not wanting to come off the bench. You know, he's earned his role as a starter. It's an interesting situation, like you said, with the Lakers, because you do have Ball, who you want when he comes back from his little injury, to, you know, kind of have the rest of the season to mesh with that, the younger guys that they have. But it is a good opportunity for Isaiah, whether he's bought out or whether he plays on the second unit or they work something out, for him to showcase nationally, you know, to get that contract money back that he may have lost so far, and to try to get maybe a big 1-year deal or something with a team. So I do think it's a decent opportunity for him, at least, you know, a team in a different situation where there's not as much pressure and, you know, expectations for the playoffs. But it also frees up some cap space for LA by getting Jordan Clarkson off the books. And it gives, which is an interesting deal because they're rumored for a LeBron destination, and you basically, the Cleveland made it easier for them to do, but that's neither here nor there. So the Lakers look to have two max cap spots going into this offseason, which is, you know, for Paul George leaking out there, LeBron James leaking out, you know, that does make things pretty interesting.
Exactly. The one thing, the crazy kind of irony of the whole Cavs Lakers trade is, you did kind of touch on it on the Cavs side, is that they're the Lakers side is that they're now freeing up this cap space to sign LeBron.
Yeah.
But the Cavs are also putting themselves in a position to try and keep LeBron by adding him with all these young players who are definitely players to build off of. Along with Paul George and LeBron, that could be definitely a championship team, even without Clarkson and Nance as role players.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that they could do some things. If you were able to sign those two major stars, you could definitely play around with some young role players there and maybe get some other guys in free agency and trades. But also something that stood out was the being able to obtain Rodney Hood from Utah. You know, Utah got Jay Crowder and Derrick Rose back. The word is they may buy out Derrick Rose. He may be headed to Minnesota after the buyout period. But they're taking a chance on Jay Crowder. Rodney Hood was somebody who's approaching restricted free agency, probably going to demand a paycheck, similar to like Marcus Smart. This may be kind of motion that the Jazz weren't too get too jazzed up, no pun intended, on that's such a lame joke, about signing Rodney Hood in the offseason and matching what another team might be willing to pay him. It also gives the Cavs an option to keep kind of a piece to I guess tease LeBron with, saying, hey, look, we have this young guy, we have his rights, we're able to match whatever he gets in free agency. You know, here's another piece for you to run back next year if you stay with the Cavs.
Exactly. And I think Rodney Hood adds a lot of value to this Cavs team as a shooter, defender, very long. I can play debatably two and three. Something that the Cavs definitely need depth in on the wing.
Right. He's a sharp shooter. If he stays healthy, that's a good call. And George Hill is he walks softly, but his play is shown on the court. You know, he's a plus defender and a sharp shooter. So that'll be a piece there infused into that starting lineup, probably that really can get them clicking again. Hopefully this keeps them above water until you get Love back. And the starting lineup now with when Kevin Love is back healthy before the playoffs, it gets pretty interesting, especially if you're those other teams in the East that may have been feeling pretty good about themselves the past couple of weeks with the way the Cavs have struggled, you know, Boston and Toronto. You may now be thinking, well, did we sit back and not do enough here at the deadline? I will let you touch on what Boston did today. They re-signed Greg Monroe.
I think the signing of Greg Monroe was definitely beneficial for the Celtics. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've always had issues rebounding and playing big, as Al Horford has kind of been our one cog there to kind of keep everything going. And we have Tice and Baines to kind of keep things going, but having Monroe, a veteran who can score still, defend, not as mobile as he used to be, but get rebounds and just play solid minutes is what's hopefully going to lead the Celtics to a playoff push.
Right, he's a very consistent double double type player. You know, I think it was 2 years ago he was like averaging 17 and 10. You know, last year was like 16 and 9. So he's a guy that's going to give you, I would say realistically with that Celtics starting lineup, you know, 12 points, 8, 9, 10 rebounds. Like that's big time for what you guys need. You got a lot of guard and wing play, which is what you need in the NBA today. But to go somebody that can guard and really kind of stay in the low post beside Al Horford and let him kind of stretch out and run those pick and rolls is really interesting and a really good piece for you guys. And it's a trade that you didn't have to make. It's just you didn't lose anything to get him. So you're just using like $5 million of your disabled player exception for that. So
exactly. So, and Hayward's really helping us out in that regard, as upsetting as that is to say.
Which is crazy because he can actually come back from injury and you still get to use that full amount of money. So if something happened and he comes back in the playoffs or the last week of the season, that would be some type of story.
Exactly. Yeah.
Returning.
Hopefully he doesn't. I think he should wait out this season.
I think it would be really pushing it. It would be I would, for the future, it just, you know, I don't think it would be. It'd be cool, but it just probably not safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So the Cavs. Go ahead.
Back to Cleveland. I think that potential lineup of Hill at the one, nobody really know if it's going to be JR or Clarkson. I think they would lean more towards Smith, as he knows the system a little better and he's newer and he's more tenured there. LeBron at the three, and when Love gets back, you can have a three big man rotation of Love, Nance and Thompson, which I think could be very, very good, especially with Tristan and Nance being very athletic rim runners.
Yeah, they're similar players as far as, you know, being uber athletic, can guard on the wing and finish really strongly. So that's some versatility there that, you know, is really going to help them with teams come the playoff time. So I do like that three big man rotation, because that was what they didn't really have. And you're giving up Channing Frye, who's a solid, you know, role player and three-point shooter, but I think what you're gaining is more important to the current team, and adding Hood, and if he comes off the bench running the second unit, him and he and like Kyle Korver and Justin and Jordan Clarkson. Now you're able to really give some different looks at teams, and we will see if Tyronn Lue can come out and, you know, really, I guess, figure out the lineups, because that's going to be interesting to me. Is what I'm sure they're going to experiment here, right before the All-Star break, and then right after with different types of lineups. You know, they'll probably be having a few practices over the All-Star break, I would assume, just to get to know each other. But yeah, I like the move. It was hard for me to see how the Cavs would get any better at the deadline, but they did. I mean, and they didn't give up the Brooklyn pick. They didn't give up, you know, I mean, that was really the only non-player asset they had. So it's a good trade for them. I would give them like a solid like B or B plus on their day.
Exactly. And the big thing is, yes, they got better now, but is that enough to keep LeBron in the future? Which only time will tell.
Exactly. I mean, you do have the rights to Hood and then Hill again next year. So if he likes playing with those guys, I guess you have two more players that he can hold on to. But we'll see. That's going to be an ongoing discussion for the rest of the year. We will touch on that. Cleveland did trade Dwayne Wade to Miami for just a second round pick. They ended up sending back to Utah. Good to get D Wade back there. He wasn't really a part of the current plan, so he'll probably end his career there. He will get a chance to go back in the playoffs though, which should be fun with the Heat. He may even help them, because they did need a shot maker off the bench or something in Miami. It'll be interesting with that young core they have.
And I'm really excited to see him back with Goran Dragic again, because I do think that could be a good tandem.
Right. And I think he has the different type of mindset now than when he left there 2 years ago, you know, still wanting to be a player that was paid like an all-star. Maybe now he's like, you know, more towards the end of his career, he's like, okay, I know what my limitations are. You're a team that's already proven yourself to be a, you know, playoff contender. Let me come in and fit in with what you need me to do. And that could be very valuable, especially towards the end of games where you're able to turn to somebody who is a proven shot maker and can, you know, it's just more comfortable in those situations. So
exactly,
that'll be, you know, that's a kind of a low key move that no one's really talking about, it improving the Heat, because they didn't really give up anything. So we'll see how that works and see if there's any drawbacks to that. There was a couple of other trades we wanted to touch on too. The Cavs were really the only major news of the day. Another one that was interesting was the Denver Nuggets. They traded it was the three-team deal: Denver, New York Knicks, Dallas Mavericks. Dallas sent Devin Harris to Denver. Denver sent Emmanuel Mudiay to New York, and Doug McDermott went from New York to Dallas. And there was also a couple of second-round picks going to Denver, and I believe Dallas in that scenario. But that's kind of just neither here nor there. But that's interesting, because Denver was a team that was looking at possibly getting Tyreek Evans to be a backup point guard or kind of a second unit kind of general there to help a really good, really solid starting lineup. They'd kind of given up on Emmanuel Mudiay. New York takes a chance on him, and then Dallas kind of just gets in the mix with a decent a player that's entering restricted free agency in Doug McDermott.
Yeah, so I think Mudiay to New York is I like Mudiay as a player. I think he's definitely not achieved of what he could have. Getting injured early in his career is definitely not something that can help in the long run. But I liked seeing him play behind Nitalina, and anything that's going to New York right now is going to help, especially off the Porzingis injury.
Right, right. And you give him some time, maybe even, you know, maybe the Knicks realize after a week or so, it's like, all right, let's just get our young guys some time. And I heard today there was a report that they possibly view Nicolina as a two guard down the line if he improves, if he is consistent with his 3-point shot. And then if that's the case, maybe you are looking at getting Moutier to buy in as your starting point guard and really taking a chance on him. I don't think it's with the money that he's making, this position that you're in with New York, I think it's a great gamble for what they gave up. I mean, they gave up maybe a second round pick and then Doug McDermott, a player that you know is a consistent player, but wasn't really a part of their future. It was a trade that I wish, you know, somebody like the Grizzlies would have made to take a chance on him. I think Moutier is a player that's worth the chance, worth the change of scenery. So, and Devin Harris is a solid player for Denver as well. That'll be something that really is a calming presence when it comes to the end of the season, when a team full of young guys that have never been to the playoffs kind of has to really take in that situation and see how they react to that.
Exactly. And I think the Doug McDermott trade, the Doug McDermott piece is definitely getting thrown under the rug, but I see him fitting well there in Dallas, actually. He can still shoot, and I think he's still a value player, but he was kind of at the bottom of the rotation in New York and wasn't getting enough minutes that I thought he deserved.
Right. That is an interesting piece. You know, they may be able to retain him there in Dallas. I think they will have some cap space going into the offseason. Dirk will probably be retiring. They have a decent amount of space next year. Yeah, they have actually a good bit of space. So that's somebody that maybe they can get on a value deal for the next 2 or 3 years and, you know, really, you know, improve themselves. That's always good. You can't always wait until you get your stars to get your role players. Sometimes you have to get these guys and be looking 5 steps ahead, where it's like we may be making a move this season in the offseason to sign somebody that's a major player, and we can't wait to also sign players that go around him. So you get a player like this that you hold his rights, that's a sharpshooter that can really kind of be a starter or a bench player, whatever they call upon him. So it is a solid move for them. I think it's a good trade for all parties, which is crazy to see sometimes. Yep. Another one that really stood out to me and you, especially you, was the Elfrid Payton trade that kind of came in right at the end of the deadline, I believe, like right at the final minute. The Orlando, something that Orlando, this is going to be good to get to the trade. The Orlando sent Elfrid Payton to Phoenix in exchange for a 2018 second round pick that was actually from Memphis in a prior trade. And so a small asking price for a player that was a top 10 pick a few years ago, a player that they didn't pick up his final team option, I believe. So we'll see where that goes from here. But a great, you know, chance taken by the Suns.
Yeah, I think Elfrid Payton is one of those point guards similar to Rondo, I believe, that has the ability to score to be a triple-double every night. Definitely not a scorer or shooter by that regard, but he can definitely get to the basket and make things possible. What I'm most excited about is seeing how the Suns integrate him in. Devin Booker's injured, but when he comes back, they had him at the point guard, and seeing Payton now take that role at point guard with Booker moving to his natural two and Josh Jackson playing the three is a very young and athletic and exciting backcourt, I think.
Definitely. And it's you talked about it. They really have their three, you know, top three right now with Booker, Payton, and Jackson. And with Payton, he's a restricted free agent going into the season. If this was his asking price, I mean, I don't know how much they shopped him, but I feel like they probably did. And if this was the most you could get for him was a second round pick, that bodes well for them to being able to retain him and probably getting a pretty good value in the offseason. Whether that be his qualifying offer or signing him to a small 2 or 3 year deal, that could be somebody that, you know, with you having wings that need the ball in their hand and needing somebody to set them up, Elfrid Payton's not a bad player to have. So it's well worth the risk that.
Exactly. And I think he has that kind of value, especially as the Suns are trying to run a very, very fast up-tempo offense.
Right. So we'll see. That's definitely worth the risk. I love seeing teams doing kind of under the radar stuff like that to improve, you know, because the trade deadline is not only for teams that, you know, are trying to make the playoffs to improve. You really can kind of bottom feeders can kind of get some steals here that a couple of years from now will look like, how in the world did this happen?
Exactly. And if the Suns can stay in that top five and potentially get a top five pick, they could be looking at a big man like Bamba or Ayton from Arizona, who could really help out that team and put them to the next level.
Right. right? Maybe Orlando, this is a sign they're looking for somebody like Trae Young or Colin Sexton if they get in the top, you know, if they you know, don't get one of those top two or three picks. But yeah, so that was an interesting trade that kind of came in right at the end. One of the other ones we wanted to touch on was James Ennis.
Exactly, yeah.
He was traded from Memphis to Detroit, swapped a second-round pick for him, and Bryce Johnson, who's kind of just a throw-in that was a throw-in with the Clippers trade. Now he's going back to Memphis. And Ennis provides some athleticism on the wing, slightly average shooter, and a really interesting chance taken by Detroit. I like the move for him.
Yeah, and I think Ennis definitely has a lot of value defensively. And I think he can do a lot of things as he did in Memphis. And I'm definitely excited to see what he can do there now.
Right. I mean, Detroit, you know, they're putting themselves, they played well since they got Blake Griffin. They're putting themselves in a position to compete and to get in the playoffs. And we know in the East that it's not always cut and dry with the top four seeds moving on in the first round. So they're making themselves dangerous. You know, like we said, teams like Boston and Toronto and Cleveland at the top, you know, better be watching out for teams like that. They're coming in with some firepower in the playoffs at the bottom. So there was a couple of other small trades. Make note of them. The Pelicans sent Dante Cunningham to Brooklyn for Rashad Vaughn, who was moved from Milwaukee to Brooklyn the other day. So he barely even he had like, you know, two nights in Brooklyn maybe, and he's shipped out. You know, just kind of swapping, taking chances on other people. You know, not really much there. Noah Vonleh, the Portland Trailblazers did trade Noah Vonleh to the and some cash to Chicago for like I think it's a player that's overseas, the rights to a player overseas.
Milovan Rankovic, I believe.
Yeah, Milovan Rankovic, that's who it was. Yeah. And so basically, the Blazers were able to get some cap relief with trading Vonleh. And gives him some more flexibility and gets under the luxury tax. So that was a move of note.
Which could be very interesting as the Blazers have been pursuing DeAndre Jordan and now potentially in free agency. Right. Now with this money, that could be an interesting lineup there in Portland.
Right. And I think I'll look for them this summer to try to move Evan Turner. I think that's a move they try to make this summer is maybe – I think they have to look at themselves and say, are we close enough to where we can give up two first round picks or a first round pick to move Turner? Maybe we have to sweeten the deal to get this contract off, but is it worth it to us? So they'll have to see how the playoff run goes, see how they view their future with CJ and Damian. But I mean, they're at least, you know, making some smart moves, some little stuff at the deadline.
Do you see that backcourt being one they're keeping for the future? Cause there's been rumors about moving McCollum.
It's really hard because Portland's always a team that is hard to predict. Their owner is, you know, he's a very active owner that wants to win now. That's the move to sign Evan Turner a couple years ago. It was a win now move that, you know, it's hard to understand why from a lot of perspectives. But I do, if the trade's there, I think they make it. If I believe Damian is the player that doesn't leave, if they do make a trade, it will be CJ. And I think, you know, if Damian's the type of player that they would consult on a trade, and if they think it makes them better, I think they would break it up.
And what would be the asking price for a player like McCollum? I think it has to be a first round pick.
And definitely a first round pick, maybe more. Definitely, maybe more than one. You know, if you're depending on the level of team, you know, if it's a team that is looking to be in the playoffs, you're going to want probably more than one. You know, instead of it being like a bottom seller that you can capitalize on the first year, and probably a young player as well. They're going to want somebody on a rookie contract that they can have the bird rights to.
Definitely.
You know, maybe ahead of restricted free agency. So you're not going to get him for cheap. I mean, he's a player that is all-star level. If he wasn't in the West, he would have probably made the all-star game. So, But I could definitely see it breaking up.
And another thing I just wanted to add in there, Kemba Walker and DeAndre Jordan not getting traded. Which I think the Cavs were very persistent on Kemba. But I think the asking price was that Brooklyn pick that they just weren't really willing to part with. And similar to the Clippers on Jordan.
Right. And like you said, there was a rumor that the Cavs were trying to do. That was the other deal they were working on, was getting Kemba. this is my kind of take on it. I think Kimba would have been interesting with that roster right now. But by not trading that Brooklyn pick, you are able to move forward with more youth on your roster, the rights to retain that youth, and adding that pick this summer. So you're even more appetizing to LeBron than getting a short-term player like Kimba, who you'd end up having to pay in a year and a half, basically. Probably pay him close to a max deal too, which would just make things a lot stickier.
Definitely.
So, I'm a fan of keeping the pick. You were able to – for right now, the look is that you improved your roster, and so you can revamp it again. So that's – and Brooklyn looks to be, you know, dropping a little more. I did just some breaking news. They tweeted that Jeremy Lin opted into his player option for next season. So
that's good.
$12.5 million.
I think Lin is an under – as was all hyped up and people realize – forget how talented he really is as a point guard.
Oh, yeah. I really like him. He's got a lot of good. He's a good shooter, good ball handler.
Smart, very smart.
I think, right, with him opting into his player option, I think that's a off-season trade piece that they might look to move to a team that has some cap space and wants to compete and needs a point guard like him. So I think long-term, he's probably like a best suited to be a second unit point guard. Mm-hmm. Longer into his career to contribute, but. Interesting the moves that Brooklyn's making. So, other than that, I think a lot of teams you saw a lot of teams not make moves. I think you're going to see that's going to lead to a lot of action in the buyout market. Another player we didn't see moved was Tyreke Evans, which I wanted to talk a little bit about. You know, Memphis, they sat him out over a week ago. He's been the last three or four games he hasn't played. With the view was that he or the take was that he was going to be moved, and the reports were that Boston was offering 2 seconds and Yabusele, and that Denver offered a second rounder and Moutier and or 2 second rounders and some salary. All was said no to. They were pushing for a first round pick or something more that they perceived more valuable, and in the end, you leave the deadline with nothing. So. I don't really know it. I've been thinking about this all afternoon. Let me get your opinion on it first.
I think there has to be an agreement in place that Evans would stay. I think they definitely talked to the front office about it as mm-hmm. they benched him for the past week or so. I don't think the market was there for a first round pick for him. Cause I do think this season for him is kind of an anomaly and not really in his character. I think he'll come back down to a 13 point per game score. Shooting at 35% from mm-hmm. three and a very physical and strong guard, but not someone that I would ship my future for. I think the 2 second right. rounders and Yabusele was probably the best offer they would get as Yabusele isn't getting enough minutes on this kind of loaded Celtics team right now.
Right. I think it would have been a really interesting trade for Memphis if they would have taken that one. Maybe there was some kind of crazy protection on the second rounders that turned them off. We'll never really know. But Yabusele is a player that I would take a chance on. And at least you're getting that's what leads into you must have had some discussion with Tyreke about signing. And the signing of Lou Williams with the Clippers the other day for less than what the mid-level exception is going to be. He signed for $8 million a year for 3 years. That really that changed things. It could have improved them for Tyreke, but it seems like it may have lowered his value, which is good for Memphis because now the mid-level exception I think is north of $8 million. You're able to use that on him next season, depending. You know, if he's offered more, he might leave. The local kind of rumors are that he's loves being back in Memphis, wants to be there long term, has kind of discussed this with people. You would hope that Wallace had that assurance that he would stay before he let these trades drop, but we don't really know. You know, there has been a history of ill-advised moves there, so we'll see. What really kind of hurts right now in the moment is the fact that it's the draft pick that right now is I think top seven, top eight, and it had been consistently falling without Tyreke in the lineup. Obviously, hadn't been many bad losses, but some good learning losses where you're able to get your young guys minutes. And now if you infuse Tyreke back, you have to think he accounts for a couple more wins here and there. And with how jumbled those teams are, you could look at losing two or three draft spots, which I guess you have to deal with that.
But, yeah. And I think, I don't know. calling it. I wouldn't be totally opposed to continuing to tank for this team. I obviously don't want to be vocal about that in the to the public, but maybe not. Maybe taking back Evan's minutes still, seeing if there's any any chance to kind of drop lower in the rankings. As this, I do expect this to be a very, very good draft class.
Right, there is depth at the top, and that is one thing. If as long as you can, I mean, I was hoping for a top five, the top six pick. As long as you can stay in the top 9 or 10, I think you're going to get a very solid player. And it's a player that, you know, the kind of rookie talent that hasn't been in Memphis in a long time. And the way I kind of rationalized it with myself is that at the end of the day, at the end of the season, if we can look at this and be like, well, you secured a top 10 pick and also you re-signed Tyreke Evans, then I do think that is itself better. You're in a better spot next year than simply just having a top six pick or top five pick. So you're able to keep Tyreke and add a player at the top. I think you do kind of provide yourself a better roster for next season, which I believe they're going to try to compete. So we'll see. Still,
and go ahead. And with a lineup of having Evans, Conley, Gasol, with those three, and you add one rookie who can be kind of a game changer. I think that puts that team at least in the top. In the top 10 teams in the West. And maybe signing a key free agent.
Right. I mean, you have to look at what they were on pace for this year before Conley went down and before everything started happening with Fizdale. And they look to be a playoff team, you know, somewhere probably 5 to 8, you know, nothing too crazy. So hopefully what you're able to do next year is run it back with these guys. The role that Tyreke was meant to play this year and how he was so successful at the beginning of the season while Conley was healthy, I think that kind of it gives you makes it harder and harder for you to separate from this person. And maybe that's what the front office was like. If we get the first round offer, we're going to send him. But if they don't and no one budges on that, we're going to keep him. And I can respect it. I know it's still tough to have him sit out for 3 or 4 games and then bring him back. This is kind of a weird scenario, but you know, you have what you have, and at least, you know, if we're able to retain him, it's worth it. So we'll see what happens. DeAndre Jordan didn't get moved as well. Were you kind of surprised by that?
I think the Clippers were only going to part ways if it was for the right price. And I think that price was that first round pick. I like to see DeAndre move in the offseason. And I think that whole clip, I don't think the Clippers are going to try and build around him as much anymore. I don't think they're going to give him the money that he wants. And I could see him going to the Blazers as I previously mentioned.
Right, he'll have to opt out of that player option, which you know, if he has a guarantee from somebody that he can get it on the market, then I'm sure he will, to kind of get a start with a team that's more established. I think he was another player that along with Kemba that the Cavs were looking to try to get at the end of the deadline to add to the squad they have now. I'm sure LA was pushing, and Jerry West for sure was pushing for that Brooklyn pick above all. And, you know, just wasn't willing to part with that. That's why he's still in a Clippers uniform. We'll see what happens with him and what the Clippers plans are moving forward. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the outlook for the playoffs. We'll start with the East. And with Boston able to pick up Greg Monroe, didn't make any trades. We'll see what they do in the buyout. You know, Cleveland adding what they've added. Toronto staying pat for now. You know, Milwaukee not making any deals today. You know, what do you think the outlook of that? Has it changed anything in your mind? Do you still think the top of the top, or is there any team that's more interesting to you now that maybe can make more of a substantial run?
Well, the Cavs are right now 6 games back of the Raptors, which makes it kind of hard to make a push as the Raptors are still a very hot team. Right. And the Wizards have been playing well too. I see the top 4 staying the way they are. Potentially the Raptors overtaking the Celtics at a point, but the Celtics kind of bouncing back up as they figure things out to get to the end of the season. The bottom half is where I think everything gets shifted. I think the Bucks are still probably a 5 seed, but I wouldn't be surprised if Detroit moves up to the 6 and bumps potentially Miami or Philadelphia out. And I think Philadelphia's a very talented team, but just off of experience and all the, and just the fact that they're so young.
Right. No, I think you're right. I think Boston and Toronto are going to kind of flip flop. I think Cleveland will stay in that three spot. They probably,
especially with the transactions they just made.
Right. They'll do all they can not to move down. I think staying in the three, I don't think is that bad of a deal. Two or three, it's kind of the same, and you're kind of track of who you're going to play. I think they feel confident in whatever team they're going to face. Milwaukee and Washington right there. We'll see if Washington can continue to play hot and hold off Milwaukee since they're without John Wall. But I think Detroit makes their way into the playoffs. I don't know if it probably would be Philadelphia that drops out. Personal viewing pleasure, I'd rather watch Boston, Philly first round. But
that's what I
– And honestly, if being a Boston fan, and I heard people talk about this the other day, Philadelphia or Detroit first round, with the rebound, I mean, maybe Monroe fixes this a little bit, but with the rebounding issues you've had, that is not the most most fun matchup for you. It's not like it's a breeze or anything.
The Celtics have had a very, very hard time playing both teams, actually. And Drummond has had his way with Al Horford and Baines and Tice every single time we've played them. And they've embarrassed us on a couple occasions. But and now with Griffin, I think that makes that matchup a lot harder. So I would hope to see Philadelphia. I would rather see Philadelphia if I was for the Celtics. But I also wouldn't be surprised if Detroit moves up to if Miami could potentially move into the all eight out. and Detroit move into the seven. I wouldn't mind seeing that matchup at all. And right, I think that'd be an easy. We'd win in five tops.
Right. I'd like to see Miami's consistency and if they're able to, after the All-Star break, without really a star, be able to continue the success they've had. They've already dropped a little bit here pre-break. And I think Indiana will stay there in the playoffs as well. So not really much change there. The top teams in the West didn't make any moves. Golden State, Houston, San Antonio, Minnesota, State, Pat. Rumors were that maybe the Thunder were looking at an Avery Bradley or a Marcus Smart. No moves were made there. Denver made the move we talked about, minor thing. Portland, minor move. New Orleans, a couple of minor moves. Really, it was the West was mostly the teams in the bottom making the moves, but nothing really changed to me. I don't think the Clippers are – I think they're still a 9 seed, and I think Utah now trading Hood has kind of been like, okay, we know we're not going to make the playoffs this year, but we're kind of reloading and trying to make the roster more flexible for next season.
Definitely. And a trade that didn't happen, but there was a lot of talk around it, was Avery Bradley going to the Spurs and playing in Popovich's system, which I think would be very, very good for both sides.
Right. That would have been interesting to put him in that system and really he would have had so many open shots. And he's such a good open three-point shooter.
And a great defender as well. And thinking next season, if potentially he signs there, which there's been rumors that he's interested, a wing defenders of him and Kawhi going at it together would be very, very, very hard to guard.
Think they may have Danny Green under for one more year, and they're all three great perimeter defenders. Exactly. So
that'd be a great tandem that you could – a trio that you could interchange and rotate through.
That's what you have to have. You have to have scoring and defense from your wings, or you're really in a tough spot. So, there wasn't one much else on the trade front. We'll see how buyout market comes. There's some interesting storylines here. How this plays out, we'll see. Here teams slow down for the All-Star break. The Cavs finally have they're a little bit more calm now. They won't be in the news every day with a teammate calling everybody else out. So we'll see if that improves through things around there. But it's going to be an exciting rest of the season for sure.
Definitely.
Yep. All right. Well, that's all I got. If there's anything else for you, Nate?
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
You want to deep dive on the Luke Babbitt trade?
Oh yeah, yeah, the Luke Babbitt trade. We were talking about this before, and how I've had enough of Luke Babbitt. Coming out of college, I will say I was very high on Luke Babbitt for some reason.
Really?
I thought he was the Doug McDermott before Doug McDermott came, but never really turned into much.
No, he's always annoyed me in real life. And then also, if you ever play NBA 2K he's always a player that for some reason is like an A-plus three-point shooter.
And you never
want to draft him. You never want him on your team, but then if you play against him, the dude just drained. And you're like, this guy's unrealistic, man. Like, he can't even get off the bench in the prime.
I'm surprised he's still in the NBA, actually, which is
– Yeah, it's crazy. It's just he's long. He shoots somewhat, and he's like 6'7" or something like that. 6'10".
No, 6'9".
Oh, wow. Even bigger. Yeah. So that's why he's still here. He can shoot and he's tall. But
can't play, though.
But can't play. It doesn't really matter. But yeah, guys. So we'll talk to you next week. And we'll see if anything comes out of these trades, any more news, any other breaking news. But appreciate you coming on, Nate.
Awesome. Thank you. And don't forget to follow Vendetta Sports Media. I'll be on with my podcast along with Justin Ellick and Scott Baker. Keep It to Yourself. They'll be airing either tomorrow or Saturday. And thanks again, Jacob, for having me on.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Check out those podcasts for sure. And, check out the website, vendettasportsmedia.com. One of the co-founders, Trey Daubert, is a stud at getting breaking news posts out. So he was really breaking those all day. Really getting those recaps up. We'll have some more feature pieces, I'm sure, here in the next couple of weeks. But anyway, look for us on social. We'll tweet it out. Peace.